everyone. Thanks for being here, and thank you for coming. I'll just start off by explaining what sensory ethnography is and saying a little bit about who I am and what my broader research is before diving into the paper itself. So sensory ethnography is a form of ethnography developed by the Sensory Ethnography Lab at Harvard. The Sensory Ethnography Lab is in essence a graduate school based at Harvard University across the departments of anthropology and the department for art and film that's called the Department for Visual and Environmental Studies, a long and confusing history there about the name, and that's where I was lucky enough to be a fellow last year working with these filmmakers. So in this interdisciplinary setting, ethnographic filmmakers make audiovisual work that infuses visual anthropology with sensory aesthetics and other influences from contemporary art. A little more about me. My broader research places these films from the Sensory Ethnography Lab alongside the poetry of Jory Graham, who is a contemporary American poet based also at Harvard. And putting these two bodies of work in conversation with each other, I explore the ethics and the aesthetics of swarm, defining swarm broadly as an uncountable mobile mass of humans, machines, and animals of various sizes and species. So in my thesis, I analyze how these works deploy sensory aesthetics to immerse the audience in the distributed subjectivity of the swarm and ask whether this can extend compassion beyond the human. Today, I'm going to focus on one film in particular from the Sensory Ethnography Lab that uses sound, and how it uses sound in particular to reveal the complexities of human-animal relations. And just from reading Cara Clancy's abstract, I can see there'll be lots of crossovers in how we talk about and how we ask, how we can develop what Gallagher calls broader sonic sensibilities. So the film I'm going to talk about is Sweetgrass. It's the, from 2009, it's the film that really launched the lab and shows the beginning of the filmmaker's deep interest in sensory experience and the affective nature of human and animal relations. Sweetgrass follows the last herd of sheep to be guided over the Absaroka Beartooth Mountains in Montana, the Midwest of North America, for summer pasture. The feature-length ethnographic film is a co-production between Lucy and Casting Taylor and Eliza Barbash, and both of whom, as true participatory ethnographers, joined the herders in Montana for three summers. This was before they moved from Boulder, Colorado to Cambridge, Massachusetts, where Lucien founded the lab at Harvard. So the film is an elegy to the sheep herder, his herd, and the American West. Visually stunning, it is nevertheless through the film's surprising oral composition that Sweetgrass achieves its complex portrait of the relations of intimacy and violence between the herd and herders traversing the vast mountains of the American Midwest. The film both dispenses with a voiceover and decenters profilmic human speech, using instead the visceral immediacy of sync sound recorded with lavalier microphones, the microphones you stick on people, and in this case, sheep as well. This method of sound recording has a profound impact on the affective experience of the film, which I'll now explore in this paper, focusing in particular on three specific aesthetic techniques, how the human vocalizations are bestialized, the way that sensory disjunction is deployed, and how the film uses an effective oral bombardment to immerse us in this massive herd of 3,000 sheep that's almost impossibly controlled by just two herders going over a journey of 150 mountains across three states. But before I move on to these aesthetic points, I'd like to briefly mention a few points that we learn about hearing from the film as a piece of visual ethnography. So the film is, of course, full of profilmic examples of humans and animals hearing within and across their species. And I'll just briefly mention one example of animal communication and highlight one of the rare instances of human speech in the film, extended human speech. As I say, these are points that we learned from the film as a piece of visual ethnography. And they're important and interesting, but I'll mention them more briefly so I can focus on what we learned from the piece as a, from the film as a piece of sensory ethnography. How the soundscape of the film is constructed in such a way that can teach us... Is this skipping ahead? I don't know if there's a performance button. How the film can teach us more, or at least differently, to traditional observational mode of visual ethnography and documentary. So an early example of the powers of communication by sheep, I was reminded of this by John Webster's comment yesterday about when a lamb bleats over the field, only one ewe will look up. And so in this scene, just up at the top there, which you can't really see, there's the herder, she's separating a lamb from the that's just been born from the flock, and the ewe is tentatively following and then rushes back to join the rest of the flock because the herder is trying to separate the two in a pen. And so the woman supplements the lamb's bleats with her own chirruping calls to the mother, interestingly. But when the ewe retreats into the pack, it becomes visually indistinguishable to us. And we see the power of animal or communication between the mother and lamb as the ewe eventually responds to the lamb. These bleats are not only individualizing, but uncannily emotive. As a viewer, we read emotion and expression into these animal vocalizations, and we're worried that the mother has been lost, basically, and we're relieved when it's brought apart, brought together with the lamb. So the herder's chirruping calls to the ewe in this scene are just one example of the various calls we hear over the course of the film made by the herders to the sheep, horses, as well as their sheepdogs. These calls are often non-verbal and have evolved among the specific community solely to communicate with the animals. The first human call, interestingly, in the film is after about 3 minutes of bleating and the sounds of cowbells and munching and hooves on snow and wind and so on, is Coom Biddy. He's shouting Coom Biddy across this snowy ranch, which is derived from the medieval English for come, I bid thee, but it's evolved into this different linguistic formulation. So this much we can learn from the film as a piece of visual ethnography. But like I've been saying, it's a piece of sensory ethnography that challenges us to hear and listen more in more radically different ways than simply witnessing these animal calls from the humans. So the film decenters intelligible human speech by bestializing human vocalizations, a point which I'll develop now, but before turning to the techniques of sensory disjunction and oral bombardment. But just before I do that, I would like to make the point, I think it's important, that the film doesn't completely jettison human speech and speech among humans. Indeed, it's one of the most powerful scenes in the film, in which the more caustic of the two herders breaks down to his mother on the phone from a viewpoint overlooking the mountain range, as this scene here. The sublime stance of the man looking over the mountain range is completely undercut by his human vulnerability as he's wailing to his mother about like his knee pain and the horse being hungry, etc., and all the like extreme physical hardships of the job. So such scenes of human verbal expression are more powerful because of their scarcity in the film. Okay. Bestializing human vocalizations. So thanks to the sync sound recorded from several lavalier microphones, the film captures not just the humans and sheep's vocalizations, their whistles, calls, and bleats. It also overhears their guttural non-vocal sounds, sheep chewing grain, herders clearing their throats. And through this, the film achieves a startling intimacy with its human and non-human subjects through sound. In reminding us of our shared bodily existence, this ethnographic soundscape offers a salutary challenge to human exceptionalism. And that's a really core point to the film. It's interesting here to compare briefly the film with a short film I saw at the RAI, Royal Anthropological Institute Film Festival recently, called Ayoha, made by Vladimir Pavlovich, that follows a lone shepherd in Montenegro. It's only 22 minutes, this short film, but it uses a similar approach and could be termed sensory ethnography. But it focuses entirely, really, on the voices made by the human, which are extraordinary. Like he's developed a dozen or so calls to his herd of goats and sheep, and they seem to understand, and they're fantastic noises. And I found the film effective as an immersive experience. There's lots of close-ups on the throat, and so the human figure is bestialized in that way. And I enjoyed its contemplative pace, but I was frustrated by the extent of focus on the herder and was waiting for the viscerality of those close-ups to be interspersed with panning shots that would enable us to at least ponder how his voice might be heard by the sheep and the goats. And that is, I think, what this film achieves, that the moving of focus, the shifting of focus between the two. Because in Sweetgrass, human sound is certainly recontextualized within animal sound. It's bestialized. We overhear gruff mutterings, vocalizations, the vocalizations are more visceral than verbal. But the emphasis is shared more evenly with the beasts. Indeed, as the film progresses, its primary ethnographic subjects become the sheep rather than the herders. In some scenes, the camera seems to take on the perspective of the horse or sheep that's being gently spoken or sung to by the herder at night when vision is impaired, but through sound, intimacy is maintained. Again, from John's talk yesterday about the importance of sound when like at night and when visuals can't help is making me think of this. So the film is about humans and animals perhaps equally. This is something Verena Paravel, another filmmaker at the lab, has talked about in an interview, saying that they are very interested in the human. It's not about putting the human down in this sort of taxonomy, it's about bringing the non-human up. And I think that's a really key way of looking at their films. Okay, sensory disjunction, the next oral technique. So this aspect of the film's sound design is the aspect that's received the most critical attention, rightly so perhaps. It's the way in which it combines visual distance and oral intimacy. So critics such as Irina Leinbacher have noted, we overhear the breath and mutterings of a sheep herder seen from over a mile away. And of course, this is thanks again to the lavalier microphones that are attached to the herders. So intimacy here is captured through the ears, not the eyes. In the scene that this image is taken from, it's not so intimate in terms of mutterings, but in fact the herder is screaming obscenities at the sheep that have fallen down the cliff face, and he's trying desperately to get them back up the cliff face. But there's still this technique of sensory disjunction, and it does create this eerie intimacy with subjects that are seen far distant. So distance, proximity, intimacy are uncannily intertwined. I'd like to spend a bit more time talking about oral bombardment, which has received less attention. So this is the immersion in the teeming herd, and I call it a swarm in my broader research, and argue that sheep can swarm under the right conditions, coerced by humans and so on. This immersion in the teeming herd is achieved by scenes filmed from within the herd itself, with sound recorded. They lost a few microphones, so stopped doing that because the sheep kept destroying them, but they did record them from attached to the herd as well. So visually filling the screen, and on the silver screen, they're huge beasts. Like we're completely immersed, surrounded by them. In fact, the oral bombardment of their bleating is yet more affecting. To share this with you, I'd like to play you a short clip which demonstrates how we're immersed in the continual struggle for control that characterizes the whole of the sheep drive. So in this scene, we hear, I suppose, three herders at this point agitatedly communicating with each other by walkie-talkie. They're cut off, I tell you. And another whistles to the sheep and frantically shouts to his sheepdog. Transmitted through walkie-talkies and recorded on these lavalier mics, the human voices are strangely disembodied. Hearing voices removed from the bodies of the frustrated herders adds to the scene's atmosphere of anxiety and confusion. Over all of this is the continuous sound of the herd's bleating. Bleat follows bleat, piling up into a cacophony that could send a human mad. As Ernst Cowell, the film's sound artist, told me, Because the human voices were recorded on the lavalier mics, they could, of course, have been portrayed crystal clear, but they decided to render them quieter than the bleating sheep in the sound design, which I don't think comes across quite so well with this mono sound here, but in the cinema, it really is all about the bleating. And so they purposely did that to render it quieter than the sheep, so that the soundscape is dramatizing the struggle for control as the herders' voices are drowned out. It's also important to highlight that the shots in this scene are cut much more rapidly than the majority of the film, which is, as much as anything else, a masterful piece of slow cinema. But at just the end of the clip I played, I could have left it for longer. That's a longer shot in which we watch the herder hopelessly watching this deafening flock. And this lull gives the viewer time to realise that the sheep are in equal distress, and that whilst they are maddeningly uncontrollable for the herders, it is through human coercion that they are being driven up this mountain in the first place. This is far from natural or spontaneous sheep behaviour. So the film works then to extend compassion both to the herders and to the sheep, without disavowing either the violence done to the sheep by the herders or the hardship of life for the herders. This brings me to my conclusions, which is that the film performs an effective critique of the pastoral and of agrarian practices themselves. Human and sheep have coexisted for thousands of years. Through the ways the film makes us hear as well as see, Sweetgrass reveals the power struggles and interspecies violence inherent in herding sheep. In so doing, it works to elucidate the complex relations between the herders and the herded, beings that are familiar yet ultimately alien to each other. In the chapter from which this paper is taken, I develop my argument to propose that Sweetgrass post-humanizes the pastoral by rendering what is the most anthropocentric of modes swarmic. And like I say, I argue that sheep can swarm to reveal the power relations and violence at the heart of the pastoral. It's interesting that critics seem largely to have missed how the film inhabits and reworks the pastoral mode, with the notable exception of Robert Curler. But in speaking of the film, Lucien Casting-Taylor has said he and Elisa Barbash, quote, sought to convey at once the allure and the ambivalence of the pastoral. So as anthropologists, they of course work towards a mode that's more reflexive in its ethnographic detail. But as practitioners of sensory ethnography, their approach is rather different to that of, for instance, Raymond Williams's anti-pastoral. Williams's Marxist approach is driven by the impetus to expose the systems of property and physical hardship beneath the idealizations of the pastoral. Sweetgrass certainly shares this aim, but rather than a cognitivist approach, it performs an effective critique of capitalism, expressing it by bearing witness to the grunting viscerality of the herders and the sheep's hardships, also the dogs and the horses. And this is what Heather Young has, in a different context, when talking about poetry, termed the poetics of intimate perception. So it is through its oral composition and how that's juxtaposed with the film's stunning visuals that Sweetgrass reveals the hardships and violence of the agrarian reality endured by the herders, as well as the sheep, horses, dogs, and bears as well. Revealing violence to be at the heart of both the pastoral and the American narrative of a romanticised tame wolfness gives the sweetness in the film's title an ironic slant. It is by hearing the film and listening to the film that we sense that the grass may not always be so sweet. Thank you.